Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Castle Lane Spare Time Bowling Show. Steve Sparky Pfeiffer along with Phil Brilo. Dwight Albert from the Spare Time Pro Shop hanging out as well. Lots to talk about on today's show, Dwight.
Good morning, Sparky.
First, let me start out the show by doing what you know I'm going to do.
I told you so. I told you, I told you, I told you. I told you so.
He's been waiting all week to talk about this.
I told you so. I told you so. I told you so. The theme for today is I told you so.
I told you so. Man. Did you hear the show last week at all, Phil?
Oh, yeah.
Hold on. You're not on. There we go.
There we go. Kept listening after over the stream when I was in Texas after you guys got done. So, and yeah, a couple of people were on the old Facebook later on.
Yeah. Mark London said that I gave him the old Burton kiss of death.
Yeah. I've learned better. Anybody I pick this year is the first guy out, so it doesn't matter.
Oh, stop. That had nothing to do with Dwight's pick. That had to do with the guy with the bowling ball at the end. Stop. Told you that was going to happen. I didn't think it was going to be that horrible. Do you know what's the funny thing about it is, though? So I didn't actually watch it till yesterday afternoon before I came in, before the Bucks game.
Yeah.
So while they were taking a nap, Jackson and Kay at home were taking a nap, I'm like, okay, I'm going to watch it. Because Jackson loves bowling now, right? So he's all about it. Like, bowling on TV, he goes and gets his ball and his pins. He sets it up.
Oh, boy.
And then he walks to the pins when the bowler walks to the pins and throws the ball and the whole deal, which is fine and dandy. And then, you know, he strike and screaming and yelling and all that, which is great, except I can't focus and concentrate and take notes. So, you know, Kay's like, well, why don't you just do it with him so he can watch it? I'm like, because I can't focus. I got to do it when he's not in the room so I can focus. So earlier in the week, I saw a picture, but I didn't know who won, of whatchamacallit, Allen, with his head in his hands and Rash behind him. And I was like, oh, man, Allen choked and Rash won or something like that. In my head, that's what I thought had happened. So going into watching this yesterday, that's what I was kind of prepared for.
Mm-hmm.
And as we get later into the match, we're like 9th, 10th frame, I'm like, how does that shot happen? I'm trying to figure out in my brain, like, how does this happen at the end to get that picture? Like, yeah. I don't understand what happened. Yeah. So we'll get to what happened in the match. If you didn't see the match, just stay tuned because it was simply amazing. That's all
I know, the funniest part is I'm watching. I only got to catch the last game at the airport in St. Louis on my way back home from Lubbock. And I actually had three people crowded behind my phone. Here we are at the airport at E22 at St. Louis Airport.
Yeah,
and three other people are watching the PBA
that you didn't know
on my phone. Yeah, they didn't know
that
they
awesome.
Saw I had it on. They're peering over my shoulder and stuff. So that was pretty cool.
That's great. Absolutely. I got to tell you a quick story too. So Kyle Troop was on this show.
Yes.
Obviously.
Who you picked.
Right. Who
yep.
I picked.
Yep.
But I didn't know that he was going to face plant on the treadmill and throw himself into a wall.
Oh, my God.
During qualifying. I didn't see
What's
that one. Didn't see that one coming. I had no idea that was going to happen. If I would have known that was going to happen or had happened, there's no way I would have picked him because that happened before we did the show Sunday morning. Right. If our insider over there, Brilo, would have said, hey, by the way, Troop fell off of a treadmill and threw himself against
anything.
The wall, I would have said, well, I'm not picking Kyle Troop this week.
I never heard anything about it.
Our insider says nothing to me. Okay, so I got to tell you a quick story. And I was going to call Tom Clark and tell him, but he listens to the show, so he'll hear it this way. So Rami Makhlouf, who used to work here, okay,
no longer obviously works here at the Big Show during the week. Baby Tosh replaced him, if you're just tuning in and you're new to the station, from 2 to 6. So Rami took a job at what was 1500 ESPN in Minneapolis, which is now Score North. They rebranded the station. So that's where he is now. So he's on with two other guys that have been established there for a long time. Phil Mackey, who's been around 100 years. And Judd Zulgad, who's been a great reporter for a long time, too, and he's been around 100 years. Both of them have been around. So it's those two guys, and now they've put Rami into the mix. So it's now those three. So I think it was early last week. No, it was the previous week. That Thursday, I want to think it was, or something like that. They're watching, they have TVs on like we do in the studio, and they're just doing their show, blah, 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 blah. And up comes a replay on TV. There's Kyle Troop. And Rami is trying to ignore it. He's trying to ignore it. And finally, Mackey can't ignore it anymore and stops the conversation of what they were talking about to talk about this dude on TV with this huge fro who keeps picking at it or whatever the case may be, and he's a bowler. Yeah. And they go on and do this like 5 or 10 minutes on the PBA, the tour, whatever, blah, 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 blah. I forgot what the topic was that Rami turned it into or whatever. So the only reason I know this is because I had saw somebody tweet like the next day at Rami something about Troop. I texted him like, you were talking about Kyle Troop? And he told me what happened then. And he's like, crazy thing is, I'm thinking maybe we should get him on the show. Do you have any contacts? And I was like, yeah. So I gave him Jerry Schneider's number. So he gets a hold of Jerry. That was, I don't know, 10:30, 11 o'clock, whatever it was in the morning. And Jerry booked him for like 5:30 that afternoon from when he called him right away. So they got him on the show. They love Kyle Troop so much, they're thinking about making him a weekly guest on the show going forward.
Beautiful.
Now see, why did that happen? Because Fox Sports 1 had a replay on in the middle of the day. They had that channel on, Fox Sports 1 North or whatever it is up in Minneapolis. Yep. It just happened to come on TV, and now they get an interview in a city where I'm sure nobody was probably talking about the PBA Tour, Minneapolis, and now these guys are talking about maybe making it a thing. So when I hear the Kyle Troop story, who do I call? Rami. I'm like, dude, you got to hear what Kyle Troop did. He's like, oh, I'm so tired about this on there. Is there any video? And I'm like, I don't think there's video. He's like, oh, we have to get him back on and talk about this. That's pretty funny. So that's how this Fox deal is huge. Because I guarantee you on my life, other places in the country, when he was up there bowling, people were talking about it. And this week, when it replays again and he's up there again, people are going to be talking about it again.
Well, yeah, he's on the Chris Paul today as well.
Perfect.
And he was on TMZ Sports last week as well, picking out the fro when he struck in the second frame of the opening game. You know, everybody's eating it up. You know, it's the personalities that the PBA needs to spread things out, and he's one of the best ones out there.
Yep.
You know, Sparky's got to get him, you know, marketing more stuff out of his trailer in the parking lot of the
bowling
center.
Talking about that last year when we had him on.
He's going to be, I'll tell you this right now. Now, he's got to win consistently, but if he wins, he'll be the guy that replaces Pete Weber on this tour.
I was going to say, the face of the PBA.
It's going to be him. Yeah. But he's got to win.
Is it the outfits? Is it the fro? Is it the air pick?
It's everything.
The air pick made me just crack up laughing.
It's everything.
So every time he gets a messenger, he does the air pick or the pick?
Right. I mean, it's everything.
Music.
It's Team Fish. It's everything that goes along with it. But you're right. The marketing side, they need to help him.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't know what he's doing. But if they get him some help to be able to help market him a little bit more and put him out there. Like Pete Weber was masterful in being able to get his brand out there and do it himself.
Mm-hmm.
Belmonte, you know, created his own brand.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
There's no reason why Kyle Troop can't create his own brand. Why can't he have his own jerseys that people can buy and his own pants that people can buy and, like, sell the outfits online?
Well, they do, but nobody knows about him.
Okay. Well, we go back to marketing again.
I still think it would be great if he had a set of young fans in the crowd with big afros on, big fros on.
Yeah.
I mean, you can do whatever. I'm just saying there's a lot that can go about it. Okay, so let's get to the Lubbock Sports Open. Coming up, Carmen Salvino in 27 minutes. So Lubbock Sports Open. So for the people that are trying to understand this, I'm going to go to the dork on the show, Dwight, first. So the wolf pattern on the road, well, it's going to get real dorky at 9:35, so I'm just getting ahead of the curve. The wolf pattern on the right lane is 32 feet for the oil. Yeah. Scorpion on the left lane is 42 feet.
Right.
That's the oil pattern.
Yes.
So explain to people listening why that's a huge difference as far as how far down the lane the oil is and how it affects your ball and everything else. And then tell everybody before you do that what the oil is on a normal house shot compared to what these two are.
Oil on a normal house shot is going to be approximately 18 to 21 milliliters of oil at about 41 feet. It's dressed on the lane where the outside 10 boards are very dry and then the middle is very oily. On the tour, they use two different length patterns. So they, Chris Barnes talks it about all the time when he's in the booth, that you take the length of the pattern and you minus it by 31 feet. That is where the ball must be at the exit point of the pattern. So obviously if you take 32 minus 31, that means at 32 feet, the ball should be around first board, second boards. That's why you saw so many guys outside on the course. Scorpion plays much longer and much heavier oil. And that's why you saw the guys playing more inside on that pattern.
And sucking. Yes. Okay, so that's what it was. Left lane just killed people. I felt like I was watching the U.S. Open for golf on the left lane. I really did. Like they put a shot out there that nobody could figure out.
Well, and if you looked at it, it didn't show up that much of the blue because the overall pattern was so short, but there was a real heavy concentration on the outside five boards on each side of the lane on that scorpion pattern. They kind of made it like how the shark was a few years ago when they had that on TV. You could see how well-defined the out-of-bounds was. Wasn't as defined on the scorpion, but you could see it, and that's why you saw a couple of shots get leaked left on that, and they just or leaked right, and they never came back.
Yeah, it looked to me watching the show that it's like the lighting above the lanes looked real dark this week, like the lighting in the house.
I know they've changed. I know they've changed the lighting they use. They've gone to more of an LED lighting, and sometimes it's just a matter of whatever bowling center. Sometimes depending on where the support beams and everything else are, they have to adjust the angles of the lights and that type of thing. So, yeah, it did seem a little darker than past shows, but I thought it kind of, you know, the crowd kind of shadowed it and stuff. I thought it kind of added a little more of the atmosphere.
Okay, so let's talk about this. Rev rates, where it's in the geeky deal here, right? Oh, yeah. Rev rates. They made a point of pointing it out and circling it on the graphic.
Yep.
That Ryan Page's rev rate in that first match was 100 less on the right lane than the left lane.
Yep.
Explain why, Phil.
Just in delay of the ball hooking, really. The more revolutions you have in the ball, the earlier the ball is going to pick up friction. Later revolutions, the way Randall was releasing that ball was getting way past that 32-foot end of the pattern before it started making its break back. So by having fewer revolutions on it, the ball's not going to travel as far once it does start making the move, and it's going to delay the move getting into the pocket. Basically, it's called soft-handing it.
Right, and he's doing that himself, correct, Phil?
Right, yeah, that's all intentional. He did that all week long. So these guys are not only changing bowling balls from lane to lane, but a guy like Ryan Page is also changing how he releases the ball in each lane to combat the two different patterns.
Also, back in the middle 90s when this core technology really started to boom and I was called over to USBC when they were on South 76, I did a ball test with Danny Speranza. We took a pancake weight block standard ball and then we drilled up a big cord ball, and I was able to achieve four more revolutions on that big cord ball rather than the pancake weight block ball.
Really?
So a lot of it's equipment, too. Yep.
Okay. Ryan Page and Troop are going back and forth. Troop just stinking on the left lane. Ryan Page makes a ball change in the seventh frame. Ball with a little bit bigger hook. Strikes. Kyle Troop, desperate at this point in the seventh frame, because all he's been doing is sparing for the most part, changes the ball in the ninth frame and goes super high, leaves a seven count. But again, I mean, we saw throughout this TV show, guys making ball changes in the ninth, guys making ball changes in the damn 10th frame.
Yep.
You don't see that type of stuff in close matches like that normally.
But you know,
not
it's,
that late.
Well, you know, it's strike or you're out. You've got right. nothing to lose at that point in time. There was a lot of that happened even during match play during the week to get 30 bonus pins. We saw a few times where guys are making that desperation change in the 10th frame.
And to look ahead to the rest of the show, we didn't know this when match one was, but it was going to be the choke show. And Ryan Page started it off. Missing the 7-pin in the ninth, and then leaves a split in the 10th and misses that. And you could hear Randy Peterson go, holy cow, like, I cannot believe what I just saw. Like, he just completely blew this entire match in two frames.
Opens.
And
everybody,
going into the ninth, everybody thought it was done. I thought it was done. I thought Ryan Page was going to win that.
Yep. They talked about that he lost his footing and he slipped on that 7-pin.
Almost fell over.
I didn't see it. What I think is they throw the ball so darn hard at the corner pins. Do they just lose a little bit of their timing trying to throw it so hard?
I think that was more it than anything. I mean, when you're off balance at the line that many times or that much of the time, It's usually a timing issue.
The one ball where he almost fell over, he threw a strike. Yeah. And it was online, and he didn't think it was a good shot as he was falling over, and then when he got the strike. But then when Peterson went back and looked at it, he's like, that was right online.
Yeah, and there wasn't that much. I mean, there was one pair that I saw that had a footwork issue, and it wasn't
right.
obviously
That's what
the
I was going to ask. Yeah,
there was one pair where guys were having a footwork issue during match play early on Saturday morning, and they did. You know, they just cleaned it, and it was fine
it
the rest of the day.
Synthetic approach house or wood?
Synthetics.
Yeah, synthetics guys will have more problems.
So Troop wins that one coming back on the right side where he'd been good all day and strikes out to win 198 to 186. Troop had seven spares in that match. And they weren't easy spares. He was picking up all kinds of spares there.
Yeah, he put a clinic on all day for spare shooting.
Split shooting. Stupid good. Okay, so now up comes Michael Tang there in the second match. I like Tang. I don't know about everybody else, but
he will win.
Tang leaves a split on the left lane right there in the first frame. He gets his first strike there in the third on the left lane. Anytime anybody struck on the left lane early on in the show, you're like, oh, somebody figures out this left lane, they're going to win this thing. And that's exactly what you had thought Dick Allen had done later in the show. Now, this I need some help on. I'm going to go to our insider, Phil Brilo, who's with these guys. So Troop follows Tang's strike with a strike on the right and left lane. I think it was on the right lane where he said, need some pepper on that one while blowing on his fingers. Please explain.
Just you need to hit up on it some more. You know you're going to need that ball to really get around the corner at that break point, especially in the left lane.
So he wasn't referring to like eating fish or anything when he was blowing on his fingers and saying, need some pepper on that one? So that's what I thought it was. Tang responds with two more strikes. Tang trips the sixth pin for a strike in the sixth on the right lane to give him four straight. Seventh frame ball, way high, six count spare. Up comes Troop, leaves the 2-4-10 in the eighth, Dwight. That's not easy.
No, it's not. Not on that pattern either.
I don't care who you are. Yep. Picks it up. Yep. Tang comes back with a strike in the eighth. I thought that was a huge ball. Because if there was going to be any momentum, it would have been coming off of that split. If Tang comes back and opens, it would have been over. But then he goes back in the left lane, wide right on the left lane, seven count, spare. Troop gets one of the luckier strikes I think I've seen. Light mixer strike in the ninth. Then he makes the ball change in the 10th on the left lane. Yep. Goes to that pink ball that he had. And then throws two strikes. The second ball, he trips the 9 pin. Strikes again to win 228-215. And the Kyle Troop train continued to roll, Dwight.
I also like the fact throughout the entire show that he had interaction with the kids that were in that front row with the parents. I love seeing the fact that the parents are getting their kids at the show and on TV and exposing them to the pro tour at an early age. I think it's great.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was nice during Saturday morning match play. Kids were in school all week, so Saturday morning match play. The stands were pretty crowded for Saturday morning, and a lot of it was probably about half the crowd was high school age bowlers, college age bowlers, and younger.
Yep.
On Saturday before the TV show, so that was nice to see as well.
Yep. And Troop was the only one to give the kids like a little high five between frames.
Yep. It's all good stuff. All that fan interaction is good. All right. So Kyle Troop is through the first two matches. We are halfway through the TV show. Dick Allen versus Kyle Troop comes up next, and then it's Sean Rash against the winner of that match in the finale on TV. We'll talk about both those matches straight ahead. And don't forget, Carmen Salfino, bowling legend. I don't know why I did this. 9:35 for Carmen Salfino. I'm just joking. I love Carmen. That's up next. Castle Lane Spare Time Bowling Show. Steve Sparky Pfeiffer. Spare Time Pro Shop Dwight Albrecht. Phil Brilo. Extra Frame. Flow Bowling. Insider for the show. I just gave him that nickname today, Insider. Steve Sparky Pfeiffer here as well. Hey. Thanks for tuning in. Coming up, Carmen Salvino, just a little bit. Don't forget, if you're going to be watching the Super Bowl tonight, which I'm sure most of you will be, Bart Winkler will be manning the fan Twitter account tonight. So hopefully he doesn't swear on the fan Twitter account tonight. So we'll see how that goes tonight. So if you're into watching the Super Bowl and being on social media at the same time, then there you go. You got Bart to interact with the 105.7 FM fan Twitter account. All right, match three now. Of the Lubbock Sports Open. At this point, Troop had survived two matches. Now, and Lamont, Dave Lamont, the play-by-play guy, brought this up this week on the show to Randy Peterson as far as, you know, when you're on the stepladder format and you've won a couple, you know, how are you feeling at this point going into match three? And Peterson said, comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know what the lane conditions are. I'm bowling on them. I know how they're breaking down. This other dude getting on the lane, right, Dwight, has really no idea other than what he's watched.
A few practice balls at the beginning of the show. And again, our insider could tell us how many they get.
He gets three on each coming on during the commercial break. So they all had the 15-minute practice session before the first match, and then Dick Allen doesn't see the lanes again until that three balls of practice in each lane.
Yep, that's crazy. All right, so match three, Allen and Troop both strike first frame. Troop leaves a six-pin on a left lane spare. And then they bring up the story about Tom Clark and Dick Allen apparently having a conversation earlier in the week. I'd go to the insider, but he just shoulder shrugged me when I looked at him. So obviously he doesn't have anything. But for me, though, like, you don't hear about that in other sports. You don't hear about, well, Brady had the conversation with Commissioner Goodell, and now he's all straightened out and playing way better. Right. Like, you just don't hear that type of stuff in team sports. I mean, pat on the back to Tom Clark, whatever he did. Like, maybe Dick was thinking, you know, maybe I should just, maybe it, was he thinking, like, questioning whether or not he should be on the tour? Was he questioning, what was he? He was questioning himself in some way or form, and it sounds like Tom maybe was playing the psychologist in this deal to get him remotivated and going back in the right direction again.
Yeah, it's Dick is a very unique personality, and he's, if you've ever seen his Facebook page, it's a lot of conspiracy theories sometimes and politics and that type of thing, so sometimes you wonder how much what Dick's doing off the lanes distracts him on the lanes.
Yeah.
Apparently not this week. Apparently his Facebook was pretty quiet.
I liked what Randy Peterson said. If you didn't know him, he would be like a professional hitman.
No. Oh, right.
Yeah.
Very dry sense of humor, whatever the case may be. Right. But he was rolling in this game. I mean, he just threw way too many strikes, and Troop simply could not figure it out. He buried a shot there on the left lane in the fourth frame, leaves a 9-pin. I mean, that's kind of how it was. Allen leaves a 10-pin in the fourth and then rolled from there at that point. Troop makes another crazy spare there in the seventh, a 3-4-6-7 spare. I mean, when was the last time you saw this type of spare shooting from a bowler on a TV show making the type of splits he was making consistently throughout the day?
Beltmore at the Masters a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's probably the last one.
In a row. He's leaving some splits and just picking everything up.
Yep, that was probably the one. And then he was down 36 there after leaving an 8-pin in the eighth. And then obviously got that. But 278 to 188, Allen wins. Within that match, though, I'm going to go to the old guy on the show now over here, Dwight. Dwight, do you remember the skills competition TV show that Peterson was involved in? Yeah. He said it was in Milwaukee or Madison, Wisconsin. And it had to have been in the 80s based on what he looked like.
Well, I looked real close at, I played it back a couple times during the week, and I looked real close at the masking units. I don't think it was from anything in Milwaukee. It had to be Madison. I didn't recognize any of the masking units. The only thing that came close back in the 80s, and they did have this like a little mini studio for it, was Regency on 76 and Forest.
Oh, yeah.
And Bowling with the Champs was taped there. So the masking units looked real close to what they showed on TV.
But it wasn't the right pair either, because that was 21 and 22.
Right.
And Regency.
Right. And I think, wasn't it in the 50s or something, whatever?
On the other side where they had the TV studio for the bowling game, that was 59 and 60.
Right. And I know it wasn't in there.
Yeah.
Right. Should have just texted
I think it was Madison.
Riggles probably knew it once he saw it, is my guess.
But that's an interesting point, though, that they don't really recognize Randy as making a 7-10 on TV when it kind of really was on TV. It just wasn't a PBA
event.
Right.
Right.
But that's still impressive. I don't care if you make it on TV or off TV. You make up the 7-10.
And Mark McDowell from Madison got a plug.
Right.
You know, on that bit.
That's awesome. Okay. So now the championship match comes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you.
Bum, bum, bum.
What?
I said on the show last week, Rash should have made his opponent finish on the left lane.
For the love of God, when they did this, I was sitting on my couch yesterday. I go, I'm going to be smart guy. I'm going to be different. I'm going to do something different. And I'm going, I literally, at that moment in time, I'm like, dude, you're just asking for it. You're just really asking for it. Why in the world would you defer to let Allen start So now Allen starts on the left lane, which guess what? I almost called him Richie Allen. Dig Allen gets to finish on the right lane now. And I did not understand it. And Randy Peterson, you could hear him literally thinking in his brain, talking out loud of why in the world would Sean Rash do this?
And we watched it all week on Flow Bowling, where when it got to these matches, everybody struggled with the left lane as the entire block went on. And you know you're going to have an advantage by finishing on that right lane. Why Sean didn't keep that? I'll ask him when I see him at the TOC this week, but I thought he was easily going to finish on the right lane. Let your opponent finish first. If you know what you need anyway, hey, you're on the better of the two patterns, in my opinion.
The only thing I can think of, because if Allen starts first, that means he finishes last, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Rash didn't want to finish. He didn't want to be put in the situation of having to do something at the end. He wanted to go first in the 10th, and that's why he went the way he did.
I'm still thinking he saw something on that left lane right. That maybe fooled him. Where okay. He thought he had a better chance to finish.
I don't know. I was just thinking from the mental standpoint, I don't want to bowl last, so I'll let him bowl last.
I mean, there's only a couple of guys on tour that I regularly see that don't do that. One of those being Jacob Buttriff. Buttriff, you never see when he's in any type of stepladder final. He always wants to be the guy to finish first when he's top seed. So that, and Sean, you know, Sean's not the kind of
pressure
guy
on the other guy.
Usually, yeah, Sean's not the kind of guy to usually shy away from a challenge. So. It had to be something. He saw something in the left lane that he thought he was going to have a better chance of finishing the 10th on.
I don't know. Didn't work. So, Rash, 4-10 split almost. In the fifth. It was high, clearly. But then he misses both pins.
Yeah.
And, again, at that point, you're like, it's not a big deal. But then you fast forward to the seventh. Allen leaves a 4-10 split. And Peterson is pointing out if he gets one, he still at least has a lead of one. Right. If he misses both, then it changes the whole game. Yep. So he gets the one pin. He gets the lead by one.
But then Randy also finishes up with, it's a chance when Lamont asked him, he goes, you got to go for it. It's a championship match. You need to get the momentum your way.
But Phil, if you look ahead, if Rash gets one of those pins, they're tied.
Yes. I would play
Rash
dollar.
Rash is still up by one.
If he gets that one pin?
Because he was working on a strike.
No. I'm saying at the end.
Oh, at the end, yeah.
Yeah.
If he gets one of those pins, they would have been tied with how the whole thing would have finished.
No, Rash would have won with a nine count.
Right.
Because he was working on a strike.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You lost four pins.
Yeah, he lost two pins a count.
Don't do math on the air, Sparky. Okay. So, anyways, so then we go to Rash strikes in the seventh off the split by Allen, which I thought was a big moment, trying to take advantage of that. Then strikes in the eighth, totally lucky. He had the 7-10 split staring at him. And to get knocked out from both corners, get knocked out at the very end late. Right. That could have been a 7-10, and that 7-10, that would have been it.
Right.
And I swear to God, when that happened, I said, well, he's going to win. I mean, you get that type of stuff happening, it's over. He's going to win. That for sure, is going to be the deal where he wins this thing. Then Allen leaves a 10-pin in the eighth, picks it up, leaves a 4-pin and picks that up in the ninth. Rash responds with a strike in the ninth on the right lane. All this fool needs to do in the 10th is mark. That's all he's got to do. Just get a mark, Sean. You got this, buddy.
Well, and you know, watching that shot in the eighth frame, that Sean's ball reaction wasn't great.
No.
But he didn't change balls or anything. He just slightly changed his line. He's still half 10.
He leaves the 10 pin. I still can't believe I watched it. He leaves the 10 pin. And I'm like, all right, Rash won. I have no idea where that picture came from. Like, maybe it was an old picture they just put on Twitter. And he throws it and misses it. I was like, Allen's going to choke in the 10th. That must be what happens. He must choke when he comes up in the 10th. So at that point in time, watching this, I'm like, oh my God, dude, he just gave you the match and you're going to choke in the 10th now. Allen comes up. That was beyond stupid. That was luckier than the first strike I talked about earlier that Troop had, the light mixer. That ball, I'm not even sure if it even touched the head pin all that much. It barely touched it, but it was as light as you could possibly get to get that strike.
Well, it comes off the sideboard, hits the 4-pin, and then the head pin rolls up into the 2-pin. I mean, if you would have hit it a little more solid, that 2-pin would have been there.
It was the craziest chain of events in the 10th frame I've ever seen on a PBA telecast.
Just nuts. Just nuts. So then he comes back, gets a second strike. That was without question.
Right. Then needs eight.
Needs eight and throws an awful ball.
Yeah, through the nose. Had the seven pin there for a second.
For a second.
Or 10 had, pin. Yeah.
Had seven cup for a second.
Right.
Knocked out, gets eight to win. Come on, man. That was stupid. I mean, you can say whatever you want. That was a great TV show.
It was.
I mean, as far as drama and ball changes and things happening throughout the show, man, that was as good as it gets right there.
And I think part of it's just because of the whole two-pattern thing all week long. Once they got Cashers round and they had the left lane with the Scorpion and the right lane, that really made it interesting. And there's a couple more events coming up on the PBA Tour schedule in Indianapolis and Jonesboro coming up that it's going to be two-pattern events again. And I'm looking forward to those TV shows because it's going to be tough.
And again, yeah. Folks, that was an extra frame event last year. And now you got it on FS1.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, just to give you – I mean, people are going to forget, like – we didn't get all these live events right. on TV before, and now you're going to get them. And if I'm a betting man, I bet after this year with the numbers they're going to draw with replays and everything else, sponsorship should blow up, and they might be able to even start having some bigger purses maybe. That's what I'm thinking is going to happen. What I know is going to happen is Carmen Salvino is coming up next. Dwight Albrecht is here. So Phil and I are going to go
check
get some
out.
Breakfast, and we'll be back. Welcome in Castle Lane, Spare Time Bowling Show. Steve Sparky, Pfeiffer, Dwight Albrecht from the Spare Time Pro Shop. Go get your ball drilled over there. Have your geeky talk with Dwight. Fun stuff. Phil Brilo, the insider from Extra Frame, Flow Bowling. Bowling legend Carmen Salvino joins us now on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. How are you doing, Carmen?
Doing great.
Okay, first things first. I guess I really am blown away by the work Tom Clark has done as commissioner of the PBA Tour, because I just think this Fox deal that they have now, and then all the replays you get with Fox Sports 1, all the additional live events that they've been able to put on the calendar for this year is just a huge game changer, I think, for the PBA Tour.
Spark, you're 100% correct. Tom and I have been very close and talked many times, and behind the scenes, people do not have any idea what he had to do to keep the PBA going. We had tough times for sponsors, but he kept us going, and then he did a great job. He got us off of ESPN, which was okay at the time. But Fox has given us a lot more publicity. I'm very excited about the way the bowling game is headed right now, the sport of bowling. We got kids in college. My God, that's the number one sport. So bowling is right back on the upswing, and I hope the proprietors jump in on this and take advantage of it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And that's the one thing that I like the most, is because you get all these replays on Fox Sports 1 that exposes more people. Like, I was talking about a story earlier about a friend of mine that works in Minneapolis now. They ended up having Kyle Troupa on the air, not because they knew anything about the PBA or anything else, but they saw him bowling on a replay while they were doing their weekday sports talk show and reached out and had Kyle Troupa on. They liked him so much, they want to have him on as a weekly guest now.
Oh, absolutely. And also, bowlers are athletes, and people have no idea what it is. I'm going to bowl the tournament of champions, and I'm 85. But I'll tell you, we sometimes bowl eight games. We're out there for 4 hours, and we're lugging bowling balls across the lane because a lot of people don't realize we can't bowl on one and two and go to three and four. We have to bowl in sections because some sections of a bowling center may be easier. Like when we were in Vegas, they had 60 lanes. I went from lane 60 to 3 and 4.
Yeah, but Carmen.
I should have called the cab.
But Carmen, I mean, didn't they have like a little limo golf car transporting you around? I mean, you're Carmen Salvino, for God's sakes.
Hey, listen, it's 85. Sparky, I'm going to challenge you. Forget a sports car or whatever. I don't need that. I'll run rings around you, baby.
You're damn right you will, because I have no interest in doing what you're doing. None whatsoever, buddy. None.
I still work out, Sparky. I work out physically. I don't work out with heavy weights. I bowl with a young guy about 29 years old. His name is Sullivan, Jack Sullivan, and that's good for me to bowl with young people because I'm out there sometimes 3 and 4 hours practicing. I bowl 15, 20 games before I stop.
That is just
amazing.
That's amazing stuff, right?
At 85.
Yeah. Physically, Dwight's that of a 90-year-old already, and he's nowhere near an 85. All right.
Hey, I just didn't take good care of myself like Carmen did.
Did you hear my banquet speech at the 60-year anniversary?
I don't think so, no.
Well, I told those boys, I bowled the first tournament. I'm the last guy of the seven guys that started the PBA. And I bowled the first tournament, and I bowled 60, it's 60-year anniversary. And I told them to take their vitamins because I'll be around for the 70th. Because I'll only be 94, and I'll take my wife's bowling ball that's a little lighter, but I will be there.
That is the thing I wanted to bring up with you. So we talked about this last week, about
right.
so many guys on tour not using, obviously, 16-pound balls, but 15-pound balls. And then I start talking to people around here. There's guys in the league using 14-pound balls, Carmen. Did you ever think you'd see the day where, you know, grown men would be throwing 14-pound balls in league play?
Well, you know what? Let me give you an analogy to scientific evaluation of what you're talking about. When baseball players start the season, they got the 36-ounce bat. Before the season's over, they're down to 34. And the reason why is because you want to keep the speed of the swing. That's more important than the weight of the bat. Now, in bowling, the rotation is more important than the speed of the ball. If you don't have, I don't care if you throw 16 pounds and you rotate real weak and the ball's going end over end, you aren't going to carry anything. You could take a 14-pound ball and rotate that a lot stronger and get an entry. You'll get more strikes with a 14-pound ball. Too many people are using bowling balls that are too heavy for them and losing the speed of the swing and the backswing and the energy that the ball would have at the back of the lane. So the bowlers found out that the revolutions were more important than the weight. So I could understand a person that works in a job, it doesn't have the physical technology that the bowlers do or the strength because they're working for a living. Maybe they're at a desk. Maybe they're doing something that's not requiring a lot of weight.
Sports talk so radio. Yeah.
They're better off. Yeah. Well, I didn't want to say it. I was thinking about it when I was talking.
Hey, look, the other thing is this
better off throwing a 14-pound ball and get the strong reps.
Start changing your orders, Dwight.
Yeah, this is the other thing, though, because we all know, I mean, you've helped design millions of bowling balls and everything else. So with the two-handed bowlers and the amount of revs that they're bowling with, and like you just said, guys are using lighter balls to get more revolutions. Has that impacted the design of the bowling ball at all as bowling has changed?
Well, first of all, I gotta say this. Technically, Sparky, you're a two-handed bowler. Do you start in your stance with one arm?
No.
Everybody's a two-handed bowler.
Right, yeah.
That's a good answer.
A different technique. Scientifically, that's a different technique, but we're all two-handed bowlers. You and I leave our left, if we take a five-step delivery, we take our arm off the left arm off the ball on the third step. They keep their arm on the ball, but we all start with the first three steps with two hands on the ball.
That's true,
so except for Wayne Webb.
That's a different. Now, let me explain this to you also and start putting some science into the sport. If you swing a ball, the conventional way, and cock your elbow right before the release, you'd be, see, where the conventional way is your arm is vertical at the foul line. Theirs is horizontal. So if you cocked your arm, you would be horizontal. You wouldn't be any different than them.
Okay.
Now, you just got a smoke bowling lesson. Now, I hope you take it.
Well, I appreciate it. Still, I'm not going to bowl the way.
Marky, you know I know you well enough to give you.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. But the question still remains the same. With all the revolutions that these guys are throwing with now versus maybe back 30, 40 years ago, does that affect how the ball is made? Do you guys take that into consideration or no?
No. The balls are made the way they're made for everybody. They're not specified for any particular style.
And that's the one thing.
Well, first of all, you can't make the ball for one style because, first of all, some people throw hard, some people throw slow, so you have to make what I call technically a family of balls, just like golf clubs. You can't have any one club. Different people can play with a different club at a particular time, and some people like Tommy Jones, he might have a medium-looking ball. He could hook it on the lane on oil, and you take a league bowler that doesn't bowl every day, he may have to have a lot stronger ball to get the same type of result.
Right.
So you can't
design. You got to make a family of balls like clubs.
Let me ask you this. So Pete Weber was on tour for ever in a day, and he's still out there trying to do his best. And again, physically, you're probably in better shape than Pete Weber at this point. But when we talk about how he throws, right, he's not throwing with a ton of revolutions, not a bigger dude or whatever else. Is he going to be like really the last one of that sort that's going to be able to bowl at that high of a level on tour?
Pete Weber has got a gift. And in all sports, there are certain athletes that have gifts. And first of all, to reach the level that Pete or any great bowler like Belmonte or you name them, Errol Anthony, that's a gift from upstairs. And they're unique. And Petey Weber, if he would have trained, as far as I'm concerned, and I love little Petey, he's a great guy off the lanes. On the lanes, he tends to be a little spooky at times, but he's a great bowler. And if Petey would have trained, Petey could have possibly been the best bowler we ever had.
That's just crazy.
He's got that release. Yeah. Now, see, Petey throws the ball out of swing. Most guys throw the ball out of muscle. He lets the gravity work for him, and he gets through. If you watch his release at the end, he's got strong fingers on that ball. He's not throwing the soft. He's so smooth, it tends to look soft.
Because for me, I mean, I don't throw a big hook. I'm a small guy, as you know, kind of like Pete Weber to that same degree. And I'm watching the rev rates on TV with a strike tracker now on Fox. And I'm just going to myself, man, I just don't know if you're really going to have that many guys be able to be all that successful on the PBA Tour if you don't have huge rev rates like they do.
Well, you got a point. Today's bowlers, I will say this. Today's bowlers, the rev rates is much higher with their techniques than it was when my group bowled at that era. You're right. The rev rates are much, much higher today. And the reason that they get a big score is exactly what you're talking about. The rev rates are so high, they kick a lot of pins off the sideboards and knock that 10 pin down where we would leave it. And now, if you knock the 10 pin down in between strikes, you're picking up 20 pins on a guy immediately. So you're right. The rev rate today, if you want to be a great bowler, the likelihood you're going to need that rev rate.
Being a scientific guy, what do you think of Specto and the information that the PBA has given the fans at home?
I think it's great because they can see the entry angle. That's why I was telling you earlier, I wish what people would use lighter bowling balls and work on the rotation and see that entry that these guys get. Look at the back of the arc, how that ball is coming in around a 6-degree entry. That's the key to bowling, not the weight. Now, if you can throw a heavier ball and do that, it's even better because if you don't hit the pocket solid, you can get a lot of pins off the sideboards with these high reps. These kids today don't get enough credit. I'm telling you, I admire them. The young people, I admire the way they bowl.
Carmen Salvino, bowling legend. He's going to go win the TOC this year, and it's going to be a phenomenal thing to watch, and we're going to have him on to talk about winning the TOC later. Carmen, thanks so much.
Wait a minute. Before we hang up, I got to tell you, I got some friends listening to this show.
Oh.
And the Kramers, a couple of friends of mine named Kramers, they're picking it up in.
You there, Carmen?
Schaumburg, Illinois.
Oh, in Schaumburg. Oh, absolutely. Been to Schaumburg. Isn't there an IKEA in Schaumburg?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I used to go to that IKEA all the time until they built one in Wisconsin.
I got another couple listening. Erskos also listen. So I got some friends picking up this show. I didn't know that you could pick it up in Schaumburg. They told me that. I got to start listening to you guys.
Carbon, I got to be honest. That's the most people we've had listen to the show in all the years we've had it. So that's good. I appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah, and let the people know that Schaumburg can pick it up, too.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Carbon, thanks so much.
Start getting the word out, man. I didn't know that.
Yeah, you're right about that. It's all about marketing. That's something I struggle
there
with.
You
yes.
Know, because you got a great show. I've been on this show. I enjoy it every time I come on.
I appreciate
it. Guys, take it easy and look for my name. I'm not. I'll tell you right now. If I beat everybody in that tournament, and they go behind, they go lower score than me, they ought to think of retirement because an 85-year-old guy beat them.
Wouldn't that be a great story?
You win TOC, you're going to be on every late-night talk show
That's
in this country,
right.
So you better get ready to fly.
I can't afford the time. I'll jump on the last shot.
Carmen, have a good weekend, buddy. Take care.
Okay, guys. It's always great to be on your show.
Absolutely. Thanks. Take care. There he is, Carmen Salvino on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Looking to buy, build, renovate, or refinance in 2019? Look no further and call Great Midwest Bank today. Great Midwest Bank, providing simply local common sense lending to your community since 1935. He is simply the best.
Yep.
All right, Castle Lake Spare Time Bowling Show coming up today. It is a Chris Paul Celebrity Invitational coming up. 10th anniversary. They've been doing that damn show for 10 years.
10 years.
Holy cow. Coming up on the show today, 1 o'clock Central. On Fox. That's on Fox?
Yep, Fox. Cool. Oh, yeah.
Baby. That's good.
And next Sunday's TOC is on Fox as well.
Nice.
Well, I get the TOC. Yeah. I didn't think they put the celebrity thing on Fox.
Well, you got to remember, on ESPN, the celebrity thing was always the highest rated show every year.
That's true. You got Chris Paul, obviously, it's his deal. You have Terrell Owens, now in the Hall of Fame. Yep. You have Mookie Betts, who is a stud for the Boston Red Sox. J.J. Watt is going to be in the booth, I guess, so he'll be a part of it as well. Houston Rockets forward P.J. Tucker, he'll be a part of it. Let's see who else here. William Jackson III from the Bengals. NASCAR's Eric Almirola, driver of the number 10 gold bowling Ford. And the entertainers in the field include Big Brother Season 20 star Tyler Crispin and Big Brother contestant Angela Rumans, Grammy-nominated rapper artist. I have no idea who that is. Bun B. Sure. So that's coming up 1 o'clock today on Fox 6. Make sure to check that out. Phil Brilo, he's Dwight Albrecht, Spare Time Pro Shop. Enjoy watching your game tonight. We'll talk about it all tomorrow on The Fan. Don't forget, college basketball show today at noon with Don with Chillis. Toodles!
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.